This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on our show, we have Anastasia Pagonis. Hi!
Hi!
So I already told Timothy before we got on, I am so excited to talk about your work and Memory Call and everything you got going on. But before we do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and giving us a background on how you got started for those who don't know you yet?
Sure. Yeah, I pretty much have had a camera in my hands my whole life. My family took a lot of pictures, family pictures. So vernacular pictures. Yeah, and point and shoots, doing a lot of VHS, lots of disposable and also Polaroids. So my dad shot Polaroid. My mom had the disposables and the little 35 millimeter Autoboy camera, which I actually use affectionately all the time because this is the one that she used. Now, this is not the actual one, because I've gone through about 8 of these in the last 10 years. this model. So we grew up in a house where we're taking pictures all the time. So I grew up, my mother is one of 4 and we have tons of cousins. So it was a role for me in the midst of like a big family environment on holidays and outings and stuff like that. The camera was around and I wanted it. I wanted to make pictures and I wanted to interview and I wanted to take videos. And we were kind of always taking pictures. There's a lot of pictures around my home. So that's how I grew up. I grew up where a camera was kind of a family object that we all used. Cool. And then it got more and more sort of obsessive. Did you say jealous? Not have that?
No.
Do you have images of yourself as a child?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I have a ton of them, but we just weren't the camera family. It was always like Christmas or, you know, with the big family.
Sure. Yeah. Well, then my grandfather has all these Super 8s of them, like just living the fit 1950s, suburban dream, going to national parks and him smoking a cigar. They look like straight out of Mad Men.
Yeah. Wow.
So I grew up like that. And then I really sort of, especially with my dad, with the Polaroids for me, there was an emotional connection that was made there when he would take our picture, because my father is from Greece and he doesn't speak English very well. He understands English very well. And the disconnect, he was older when he had us. And so for me, him taking our picture, that was like, I love you. That was like, I'm paying attention to you.
We're
doing something. So I would stand there and I have all these pictures. I always tell the story. So like, forgive me for all the many fans who have heard about standing in front of the car. And that's what these Polaroids were like, okay, in front of his car, whatever his car was that year. And he would take our picture and then it would come out and we would hold it and wait for it. And that was just the genesis of my obsession and love for photography was, my dad's paying attention to me. I'm in like my cool outfit, you know, like I've got my bucket hat, like my sister and I've got dolls, shit, you know, we're like ready to be in this picture. And so we have this collection and I looked at that camera, like, I want that. I want to do that. I want to take your picture. I want to take my sister's picture. Like I got the desire and then the emotional connection was made. So then by the time I got to be a teenager, I was always photographing my surroundings. And then I took it like very seriously. I knew like I need to upgrade. I need to level up. I need better equipment.
Right.
And so I went to my parents and I pitched it. I think I like put together like a proposal and was like, so I need a real camera. This is the cost. I think I saw it in a catalog and it was the Canon Rebel.
Ooh, okay. That's it.
No iteration at all. It's just the Rebel had just come out.
Yeah.
And it was like $700. And I was 14 and I told them, I'm like, I need this. Like just period. Like I need this camera. And so they believed my pitch and they bought it for me. And I wow. started photographing with that camera every day, all day. So from 14 on, I was grew up in a suburb of New York City. So I'd go into the city and take the bus in. And so street photography was like my natural beginning. I thought, wow. Well, I just want to go take pictures. And it was that simple back then. They weren't going anywhere. There was nowhere for them to go.
Yeah.
I didn't even vlog yet. It was like, right. I would print them out and show them to my cousins and my uncle and be like, made. So I was very, I had my own little social network back then. I would bust them out on the table and make everybody come look at them and we discuss them. So, you know, I started with that street photography impulse. I thought that's what photography was. All photography was street photography and Life magazine. So I was, right, you know? So I was taking a lot of digital at that time and then started family work. I was always photographing my surroundings. Then I got into the family world myself, taking pictures of children and families. The obsession deepened. And then I went into professional family photography, started using film and have been really obsessed with family work. That's my calling, my own family, personal work, others' families. I'm going to California tomorrow to photograph my muse, my best friend, my creative companion, Didi Von Bach. She hires me to come and we make a photo book of two photo books, one for each of her boys. So we're going to photograph all day. I've got all sorts of film. We've got all sorts of cameras. We're going to bring the line. That book. Yeah. So family work kind of from the beginning and then many iterations and then starting to take that more seriously and understanding what that was, getting introduced to art photography, understanding that there was a lineage here, different photo books that were making family work, et cetera. So I started to kind of understand there was a canon and attempt to place myself in that kind of in my 20s. And I'm in my late 30s now and have just been, you know, the obsession has not waned at all. I feel like I haven't even started, honestly.
Wow.
I feel like it's all been a draft so far, even though I've been here for 18 years, probably.
Man, just thinking of photography, you know, before social media is just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that blew my mind there for a second.
Well, and I'd also go to the city and sell them. So I'd mount them because I actually went to art school. And then I would put out like a small table and sell them.
So
get an audience basically and just chat with people and then take their pictures. Like I'd photograph and sell and talk and just because these, it wasn't regulated. I don't know if it is now, but I would just, you know, go wherever I was. I forget. I would go midtown, mostly uptown, I think. And just be in the mix of like these sort of seller art selling spaces. And outside of the Met, for example, nobody would really give you a hard time back then. So just sell pictures.
Man.
Pictures of people, pictures of spaces.
What year was this?
Gosh, this was like 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Man.
I'd haul like my rucksack. Pack and sack. I'd like get this big bag that had like cameras, film, and then like, you know, sort of a cardboard backed photographs that I signed. So if anybody has any of those.
Oh, man.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I wanted people to see my work, but I loved it being just like me and them. Yeah. I was so in art school and then I ended up being in the art world, but as a gallerist. So I always loved just connecting straight to my audience instead of showing institutionally, even though I was producing shows. I loved that role more. As far as my photography, I really liked to be just me direct with the viewer and have kind of forming a relationship. So it's always been that way, just straight to the people on a table.
Wow.
That's so cool.
So that when social media came, I was like, I was made for this moment. Yeah. Like a lot of people have struggled with it so deeply. For me, it's like, it couldn't have been a better fit. I'm like the asshole who loves social media. You know, like, I really do. I enjoy it a lot.
No, I do too. I miss it. I used to be so in the loop with the sharing and caring. And I don't know how it's so easy to get burned out, though. I mean, there's And plus social media, I've noticed, I'm sure I hear it all the time of how it's just, it doesn't feed you what it used to feed you. Right. Like I used to see so many amazing photographers. Now I barely see, all I see is complex ads, political crap, and who knows, somebody's like cat videos.
Yeah, that's your algo. My algo, if I didn't train it, would be like skincare. And like different, takes, hot takes. I'm like, cool. Gurus in, you know, high California talking about how to be and
that's
how to live.
So funny.
Yeah, I train my algo because I don't want to see any of that nonsense.
Yeah.
So I actually will do like conscious training times where I go through the accounts that I want and I'm just liking, following, sharing, and sharing with my other accounts because I kind of have researched it and know how to hack it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so both my accounts pretty controlled now, but I love a brain rot too. Sometimes I'll just get into the for you and I'm like, just fry my brain. Let's do it again.
It's so easy. Yep.
Yeah.
It just made me think too, talking about the whole pre-social media stuff. I take my camera with me to work and walking back and forth on my lunch break, I usually go down to this pizza shop while I'm on my lunch break and grab a slice and just kind of hang out and you know how breaks are at work. You just decompress. And I'm walking back and this guy just like stops me and he's like, I haven't seen a person with an actual camera in years. And I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, that's weird. And I was like, oh no, everybody's got a camera on their phone, you know, and nobody carries a camera anymore. I was like, that's what I do. You know, that was my answer of like the photographer guy. But it's just so weird that, you know, us photographers, we love to lug that crap around. We take bags of it with us wherever we go. But the common man.
You're right. Because they're not seen and used culturally in the same way anymore, I've found that they now have a response that is less than desirable. And AJ Tamari had just done a takeover of Counterpart Photos, I don't know if you follow them, where she's just discussing some of this, where over the last 20 years, 30 years, it's before there, she goes through the archives in New York Public Library and she's pulling out these amazing wedding photography and family work.
I did see that. Yeah.
They're not, whereas now, because of the camera's cultural shift as an object, it's camera time. Whenever you get a camera out there, people are reacting to it in a different way, and they're controlling for their reputation and their, of course, their visage, how they appear. And I'm the same. The thing is, I'm the same way. A camera comes out, I'm like, people.
Let me fix my hair. Hold on a second.
Not a good subject.
Yeah. That's interesting to think
about. So for me, like my solution to that was because I loved the freedom, photographing the city when it was 2005. I sort of seek to replicate that experience by photographing people that I have a relationship with because they don't have the camera time complex. We develop not only first date, second date, third date, a whole photographic relationship. So I kind of like to do what is sort of street photography with people I know. And that's what I've found. It replicates that feeling where I'm just there with a camera and they let me be.
That's really cool.
That's my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
You like to be a fly on the wall?
I love it. Yeah. I just love it. I mean, Chris, that's what you do for a living. So, I mean, in a sense.
My job is interesting. I tell people I photograph actors acting to like sort of make it make sense.
Yeah.
I have like more to say about that. I don't know. Yeah, it's like a very unique photographer. Like a lot of times people don't even know it's a job, you know, or they don't know that they're, when they look at a still, they don't know that for most of the time that it's somebody has taken it with a camera.
Yeah, I thought they were screen grabs for the longest time until I met you. I didn't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right, because it's on set, so that's what it looks
like. Yeah.
A still just looks like a still from the motion picture.
Yeah.
You're actually creating photography.
Yeah, which is really fun. I wanted to go back to what you said earlier about like knowing what your work, your passion for, knowing that like in your 20s, like your family work.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, like I'm having it because since I've had my kids, like my work has shifted. It was bands in my teen and 20. It was like, you know, LA and stuff in my 30s. Now that I'm like my 40s and I have my two kids, it's like the only thing I want to photograph are my kids and, you know, are my family. Like I'll do the occasional like street photography or whatever, but if I'm bringing a camera around, it's almost 95% pointed at my kids. It's never like, oh, the palm trees and the scene and this and that.
Right.
And to have that, to know that you knew that like so early. You know, I didn't photograph my grandmother and she's gone, you know, like just like things like that. Like I wish I had known then, you know.
Well, you know, there's something missing in the ingredients. I was in a cult. I was in a religious cult.
Oh.
So I was so family for women. in a fundamentalist religious cult is the only thing that you're allowed to focus on.
Wow.
So my focus was constricted externally. And the question is, it's an open question whether or not I would have gone down the path of family work without that constriction.
Yeah.
But you just needed a cult, Chris.
That's all it was.
You would have only photographed women and children because you would have only been around women and children.
Yeah,
that was so it did guide my path that way. But I think also, too, is like even joining a cult is a search for family. And so the theme of family absolutely has just been there so centrally for me from the start.
Yeah.
And then I was photographing for 10 years before I knew it was before I knew there was any type of canon whatsoever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that really was because my life, there's a boundary.
Right.
And the cult that I was in, I mean, there's a reason you call it a cult and not just a church or a religion. Cults define your life with their rules. And one of the rules for women is family first.
Wow. Whoa.
You know, yeah. So I it's part of the tongue-in-cheek name of Memory Cult.
Are we there yet to
talk?
We're
there. About- yeah. Well, it's a good segue too because Memory Cult was also a response to being a sort of Instagram anti-drug. Remember the anti-drug campaign?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, oh, balls, my anti-drug. Like you have.
Yep.
Yeah.
To talk about like why you weren't going to smoke cigarettes or whatever. And so that I love that thought. That was a successful campaign in terms of the art of sales. They're like selling wholesomeness. Don't do drugs. But memory cults really emerged because social media started to feel, you said it. It's like, I'm not being fed what I used to be fed, which was creative contact in a predictable way that felt generative and that there was an actual exchange. Now we're like fighting to see each other. And so there's all this friction.
Yeah.
So Memory Cult, when I created the concept, it really was because I wanted to replicate that feeling again of connecting over long distance through images and words that felt really, really fun.
Dude, you nailed it with that too. I'm obsessed.
I was like, this is where I'm meant to be. Like, this is it.
I love to hear
just
it.
Devour it because it's like the same kind of work that I want to create. It's so inspiring. Talk a little bit more about what Memory Cult is specifically and what it offers people.
So it's a subscription community. We're a global online collective subscription community, and we have 100 active seats. When I began, I said, how many people can I support actually where I remember their aunt's name, like what their work is going through and chronicling? And so I had come from the university setting where I was running a gallery and working with students to produce shows for their work. So I was putting language around their work and I was working with them to cull, select, show, to caption, to really give the context around their work. And my degree is in creative writing. So I've always been writing with photography alongside photography. And so I had these kind of three skill sets to say, I want to create, you know, want to be self-employed, not non-negotiable. Yeah. I have to be self-employed because I'm nuts. So no one will take me. So I did. I tried, actually. I tried interviewing at a couple places when I left the university. And they all basically said, we can't imagine you're going to be a team player. You've got too much experience leading. You have to be in a leadership role.
Wow.
I said, okay, I suppose I will. So it was a good thing. Those three things funneled down. So writing, photography, of course, and then the sort of gallerist, curator, helping people have context for their work. So it was at the same time that I left the cult. So I was already in my mind when I asked myself, okay, so what skills do I actually bring to the marketplace, which I just listed? And then what have I been accruing, if anything, at all the last 12 years? Because I was in for 12 years from 19 to 31. And I said, I know how to run a cult because I've been in a cult.
Yeah.
So I had been observing group dynamics and various sort of models of learning, teaching and learning, because it was very sort of academic intellectual cult where a lot of us were teachers, a lot of us were reading the great books and having these sort of dialogues all the time. And it was very dialogue centered. So I learned how to dialogue, even though it's a little bit more complex as a woman in that situation. When I was younger, it wasn't as complex. Then I got older and needed to sort of conform to the hierarchy, which, spoiler, I didn't. I learned how to dialogue. I learned from some really masterful teachers who were teaching in high level in the universities here how to dialogue, and I loved it. So I wanted all those things to be available to a specific cohort. When I was creating this photography, family work, my own and others, every single question I had was a 6-month journey into like chat forums. There weren't even Facebook groups yet. It was like, I would have to go on and then it would be like the chorus of, you know, males who'd be like, no, you're dumb. You know, you need to put, they were really discouraging and they were really, really cruel and very dogmatic actually. So I said, no, that's not the spirit I'm looking to learn in. I would go to the local camera shop and they would help me. They'd be like, come here, you know, and I could ask my dumb questions and like be like, what's a lens? You know, kind of sort of technical because I didn't train in photography, I trained in creative writing. So then the family work is converging for me of understanding it's a genre, understanding the canon, the photo books, the greats, the people that I would come to, you know, admire and now are the people that we host as visiting artists.
Yeah.
And I said, there's no place for the for people who are interested in this like Venn diagram to go. And the Venn diagram is personal work, work for hire. So birth, wedding, family, commercial, portraiture, and the art world. So is that a triple Venn? That's a triple Venn.
Right? It is. Yeah. It is.
So, you know, those are the three realms of making pictures that I'm interested in. And they overlap for me, but they don't overlap in the marketplace. Like I will go to Aperture and subscribe to Aperture to know about art photography. Family photography for hire needs a little help. As a genre, needs a little help. It has for whatever reason become dominated by this popular aesthetic that's worldwide. Instead of using the conventions of art photography, it's used these sort of popular conventions of like the white dress at sunset by bodybuilder and smiling, and it's very emotionally flat. So that wasn't the work I was making, wasn't the work I was interested in. And then I was making tons and tons and tons of personal work, just like a hoarder, making personal work, Polaroids everywhere. I mean, hopeless desk. You guys can probably see it. Uh-huh. It's just covered in pictures. So those are the three areas that I couldn't go anywhere to talk with people who are like-minded about these types of photography, getting questions answered, inspiration, sharing work. And I understood that it wasn't only me, that there were so many people who shared these interests. There were so many mothers photographing their children, but having, you know, either a history or background with a love for art and understanding for art, wanting to apply those concepts. And photography is so compatible with mothering small children, in contrast to writing, which for me requires silence, or painting, which needs to not be touched while it's happening, et cetera.
Right.
So in contrast to other art forms, you know, it really has become something that's compatible with mothering and small children being in the room and then being able to edit like into the night or on whatever, on weekends. And it was definitely compatible for me. So all of that funneled down together when I left the cult and needed to be a provider for myself and the kids for the first time to say, well, what would I bring the marketplace? And it was like, well, here's the skills I bring and here's the incredible demand that I already know is there by having my own social media and all these conversations that were already happening. I had already been talking to people nonstop all day online about family work for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, so these relationships were already there. So in 2022, we opened with 50 seats. It sold out in one day.
Wow.
And people, there was a reputation there already where they had understood my background and also I think we're rooting for me as I left the cult. I wasn't too public, but I also wasn't completely private about it. I shared about what I was going through. And I was photographing families and making connections all over the United States because I would do like kind of tours and travel and do five people in California and five people in New York when I go visit family. So it grew and it built. And then I had a viral post that drew a lot of interest and people were banging down my door to say, how do we get in? And I said, okay, that was, I think, in 2020. Three, and I upped it to 75. Let's do 75 and let's let people come in and I can support that.
Yeah.
And then we grew and grew and grew. And I opened what I call silent seats, which is you've had, and it's that's where you can just view all of the content. You're not in the community itself, but the entire library is open and available at your own leisure to be able to view all the content. The content's visiting artists, it's essays, it's videos, it's Q&As, it's member podcasts, storytelling. We meet once a month and have these big meetings to talk about the project. We do monthly projects. So it's kind of a very vast, vast, vast buffet table for people who love family work to come and be supported and have the chance to get into what is now capped at 100, our 100 active member community.
What a crazy idea. Like,
I love it so much. And I like, I think it's such a, I mean, I love that it's specific to the family stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a little biased because that's what I'm like, you know,
of course,
actively working on and creating. But I just think there's not a lot of places. I mean, and I love like going to workshops and you know, critiques and like meeting people and like going to talks. But there's nothing like that for that I've seen that's like this.
It's one day.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a week. And I found I would do those experiences and it would be like church camp. And I'd be like, I'm giving my life to God. I guess so. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh no, what?
Yeah.
What was the deal with Peel Apart Film? Like, I needed follow-up.
Right.
And I thought, you know what? I love the college experience where you're going through the whole semester with the same cohort. Mm. I'm in a dark room class right now at the community college. Mm. I love the people that I'm with. Mm. We are rooting for each other. We're developing. We're like, what? Oh, you know, we're helping each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're in a group chat. Like, it's fun to be going through material together and having experiences together. And then we do a retreat every year as well. So it gives people the opportunity to have something to look forward to do our monthly event, which is called the Magic Patio, to do that live, where we all bring work. We bring a photo book that we've put together for the event, and we're able to experience each other in person and have that camaraderie in this work. And you're right, there isn't anywhere else. There is nowhere else to go for this level of artistry being brought to this type of work, to family work and life work. It's not only people with families, right. But it's a lot of us are focused there, but a lot of birth, a lot of wedding, and a lot of portrait, you know, then landscape and place too. Sade Swimpel, who's from South Africa, she went to Chico Review and she came and visited me afterward.
Wow.
And we're going through the pictures and everything. And, you know, she's in South Africa. This connection that we had, you know, she came and we were sitting there like looking at each other like, this is so wild. We've known each other for 3-4 years online now. And now you're sitting in my house. You're holding my baby while I literally told her, I was like, can I go take a nap?
You know,
maybe while I nap, because he was little and I was exhausted.
Yeah, yeah.
The sweetest moment of like, people might say, you know, Instagram's not real, it's not real or something like that. It's like, that was the realest moment for me. Like, this deep connection I had made with her, and because of the type of pictures that we make. And she had said this little phrase once, which was family, nature, spirit, that's what we're photographing. And I think that's very true.
I it's also very refreshing to like, you can make the work and wherever it goes on Instagram, but to also have a place to learn.
Yeah.
And because I'm like, okay, I'm only doing what I know or what I think, but like to have somebody else's eyes on it, you know, or like to like really learn and get better is like so exciting. I'm so excited to explore more with Memory Cult. And just because I don't have anything like that, you know, and I'm, my work is my work, and I'm like, my job work is like such another thing that I have to focus on, like with networking and, you know, all the things that to have a place to be like, this is my passion, like my project, like to have, you know, a place to put it and have eyes on
it. And it's really active too. Like I can't keep up. Like,
I'm sure because people were probably react the same way that I did. I was like, like, how do I get in? You know, but it's also, you know, with Instagram, like sharing my work because it's my boys. Like, I'm also like, I don't really want to share them on social media anymore.
Right.
So I'm like, but it's like my work is like so important to me and I want to share it, but I don't think Instagram is the proper place. So to have like, you know, thoughts on, you know, maybe it being a book or whatever is also exciting because I'm like, that's not the only, great, I don't have to share it just there, you know?
Absolutely, another space. And we really talk about the moral component of digital sharing often. Mm. I had collated that into an essay that I can send you a link to that was kind of like this, you know, high watermark of everything we've thought and said and been discussing so far. And so many people resonated with it because we all feel the same way. We want to make this work and we're called to it, but protection is extremely important.
Yeah.
And leading with our moral protection of our subjects, especially when they're children and minors or women who are postpartum, birth, et cetera, people's wedding day, this is sensitive. And so that's definitely a philosophical project that I've taken on, is how do we create principles and internal scaffolding as well as practical scaffolding for us to feel a little more comfortable in the sharing space. Cause it's mixed feelings are part of the territory. Mm. And we discuss this a lot in office hours. So I do office hours every single week, which is for me, I think one of the greatest offerings of Memory Cult, because we have to talk, we have to dialogue.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. That's what I wanted, right? Mm-hmm. I was going to the camera store trying to get somebody to care about my and standing in line, like standing in the sales line, you know, but I'm like, I'm not buying anything. I just need to ask a question.
Yeah.
And to be able to have that point of contact where we can, and it's ongoing as well. I mean, I have people who have created whole photo books just by doing office hours with me every week.
Wow.
And we work on the writing, because writing for photographers and the context, developing the context, you know, there's a reason curators and editors, et cetera, exist, because it's tough. It's tough for photographers to get in there and contextualize the work. We can never see our own work.
No.
Man, I have so many thoughts going through my head right now.
Is it crazy? I knew this was going to happen when I was like, wait till we have this guest, because...
Well, it's okay. So with Memory Cult, and, you know, you're saying there's a select seed, and then there's, you added some more, but there's some, is there, how do you get into it if it's already full? Is there any way to...
Silent seed. So you start with silent seed. So for example, we are going to be opening in December 1st, enrollment for next year starts. And right now, what Memory Cult, as it currently stands, is a women's group. It's for women photographers at this current point.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, which is so funny because I
love hearing that. That's fantastic. Great.
Well, there's been so much interest now. The guys are like, let us in. So I had to think about that. And then I just had a baby. So, you know, as far as scaling goes, because I always said, okay, I can do up to 100, and then I would need an employee if I wanted to open another section, essentially.
Right.
That has maybe a different vibe, maybe more intensive, maybe it's fully open. So it's something I've been thinking about, but my son, you know, he's 18 months and waking up in the night screaming, you know, in the dark, like, little ghost, like totally terrorizing. You know, my thinking on like how to, you know, we're always growing and expanding, but it's slow and it's according to where he's at. But for those who are looking to get in, so you start with a silent seat for the last three enrollment periods. So for the last 18 months, all of our seats have filled from either re-enrollments or silent seats moving into the active membership. So that's been zero public enrollments, which is just, you know, so humbling and wonderful, and it's fascinating to have watched it. It grows as an organic thing. I'm the host and I've created the space, but the passion and the friendship that happens inside of it is what keeps it going. And people are flying all over the world to meet up with each other.
Oh my God, I love it.
I know, I see it all the time. It makes me so happy. Like, it's incredible. I just saw Ruby's flying to Mukasha in Mexico, and they're gonna, you know, their families are gonna meet up and photograph each other. And we have a whole canon now of members photographing each other. So I'm always, you know, there's 500 zines that we could make at all times of kind of what's going on in Memory Cult. And I like that. I like it to be sort of brimming. So for those who are looking to get in, starting with a silent seat, being able to see everything, and then you'll be, as a silent seat, you're the first one to know about open enrollment for next year.
Has anybody gotten like booted out and been like, wait, I lost my seat?
Not booted, but return clients that come and say, let me back in.
I can imagine like holding on with my, like, out of my dead hand, cold dick, you're not getting me out of here.
That's definitely how a lot of people feel, but also, you know, it depends on where you're at in your life, because sometimes we get people who come in and they maybe are on a photography journey only for a time. I'm sure you've met many people like that, where they do photography for a couple of years, or they're like, they have this amazing experience maybe if their kids are young, and then they sort of grow out of it. But core, I mean, we say the three sort of ways that I describe it are vital ideas, creative friendship, and mutual obsession. I mean, Memory Cult is for people who are obsessed. That's fine. It's a cult.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I'm completely obsessed. It runs photography is my entire life and has been for my entire life. Yes. So when you get that, we talk about nerding out, it's like, that's what we want. We want people that are just going full speed ahead, like with their whole life.
It just makes me think that I work at a music store and we do private lessons there. So if you want to learn guitar or trumpet or something like that, and we always have these people that come in and they're like, yeah, I tried the online thing. I can only get so far. I can't figure out this and that and theory. And I totally understand that, because like, I've gone down that road. Like, I'm a member of Magnum. I've watched a bunch of those. I'm not a Magnum member by any means. That's not what I'm saying. I bought a bunch of their online courses. And again, that they're fantastic. They're super inspiring, but they can only get you so far. It's not like I'm in a workshop or a group.
Right.
And I feel like, personally, I'm in a point where you know, since I left Tennessee, I have been on this like solo mission of shooting by myself, not really talk, because I left social media at the same time I left Tennessee. And like, it's weird. I'm not getting that. Everything you're saying right now, my heart is just weeping hearing this. I'm just like, oh my God, this sounds incredible. I've been looking into like you said, Chico Review or something like that of where.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of a dream to do that. And just, or to get, like, I need to get back in the scene. I need to get back into, because again, I was watching a Pauly B video with Andre Wagner, legendary photographer, yeah. And he's like, every once in a while, I used to just stack up roles. And it's like, you need to develop those roles because you need to see the bad habits that you're creating and like stuff like that. I'm telling you, I got freezer bags full of film that I haven't seen. I'm finally now like going through my roles of film and seeing. It's insane to me too, because I was like, I shot it, I got home, I developed it. That's how it always was. And then 4 years, 5 years of just throwing it in a bag and I'll worry about it later. The thrill's in the shot. And it's like, no, because I'm seeing these photos and it's like, I'm like, holy cow, look at this work. Like, there's something here. Like, I can see what I've been feeling for the last 5 years. I can see it.
Yeah.
It's pretty. But again, I'm not trying to be Alex Soth or I'm not trying to be a huge photographer. I do this shit for me because my brain is crazy. And like, I need to slow it the hell down and be like, you got to live this rest of your life. Like, just slow it down and chill out. But it's just crazy to hear of like, I was always, when in my punk rock days, I was like, I want to be a part of a commune where we all live in a house and we make paintings together and we write songs together and we do. It's just like those feelings are flooding back. I'm remembering the past of how I wanted it for so long.
Well, I want this for you. Yeah, I think it's so important to be part of a scene.
Yes.
And I hear so many artists talk about that. I mean, to me, that's the joy of being a part of it, is just as far as photography goes, like, is the lateral connection that I make with people that are in my pictures and the people that are alongside me in the journey. That's the point of my photographic life. And to have a scene, we also now are graduating into creating together. So we did our issue one of our first magazine last year.
Wow. See?
Super proud of it. And we you know.
Beautiful.
Keeping it to 100 pages was really, really tough.
Oh, I bet.
This is something that chronicles not only our pictures together, like an open call. So like, you know, an open call is going to be fun and interesting to be a part of because your work is alongside others, but this is a chronicle of our friendship. You know, this is a chronicle of all of our relationships. We all know each other in this. So it's not just like an open call that you're bound in a book or a magazine or a zine with others, but that I said, this is a family history.
Yeah.
That was the tagline that I put in the copy that I made about it. This is a family history, and it is, and we'll do an issue every single semester now. So I'm working on this semester's and creating this family object from our, you know, commune to me is, I mean, this is my purpose. Is to create these family objects. Like I have always created for myself, created for my clients, and then now in Memory Cult. So the ongoing eventual graduation of that is to go into photo book publishing.
Yeah.
So great time with an 18-month-old and two, with a kid in middle school and a kid in grammar school. I have a third grader and a sixth grader. But, you know, why let that stop you? The realities of eating and sleeping stop your goals? So we're taking the long view, but that's my eventual aim, is to be able to create an imprint and publish.
Dude, it's
with the kids, it's like you never, I'm like, I was like, I need more hours in the day.
Yeah. Well, if you're working out of the home too, and you've got set hours. Yep.
Yeah.
Ugh, the friction of that cannot be understated. And then when you told me your kids' ages, I said, oh, so you have two tyrants at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's so tough. And like, we're, you know, people ask us if we want a fourth now. And I'm like, ugh, probably. Ugh. Like, I want it, but I'm like, oh, God.
Like, yes, still, but.
Yeah, I know. So, and I think, you know, in Memory Cold, we have a lot of compassion for each other, as many of us are in that stage and phase.
Yeah.
And I always want to welcome older women to come in, but I think it's just there's a draw there that we are all in this phase, and a lot of us, the children are aging into being teenagers, and they have a different relationship with the camera now that they care about their image. Their parents are dumb and they don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah,
you know, so that's a transition that we support as well. And Memory Cult definitely functions as a support group For sure. Mm. Yeah.
Photography support group. I love it so much.
We need, so I really would. I mean, if there were two me's, the other person would absolutely have an open section. And there are, you know, I would encourage you guys to consider this. And I, what about Analog Talk community? And I, you know, yeah. For me, what happened, interestingly, was that after creating Memory Cult and the way that it functioned and was sold and was successful, people have always come to me for mentoring in the ways I already described, but then they started to come to me for mentoring regarding running communities. Mm. So that became a product now that I've
really
people with. Yeah. And even outside of photography with like homeschooling communities, fitness, I think one was like a political sort of orientation community. There was, yeah, another wellness one and a literature one. So like people have come to me for these mentoring to just understand the basic scaffolding of creating an online / in-person scene, which I think is like the answer to the Instagram problem and the fragmentation, because we do want to connect. There's nobody that, you know, however many miles that's going to be interested like I'm interested
in what
I do. And I also, I live in rural Arizona between Phoenix and Sedona. So I'm outside of the city now. So even more so now, you know, I might have people who like it or something, but we're not going to, I've got to drive to really meet up with someone or go to my labs 48 minutes away sort of thing. So, you know, we do want to connect over in the online way, but I think that, you know, finding those connection points and the specificity and analog work is absolutely, I mean, people don't just shoot film. People love film.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They love with film.
Yeah. It's a whole different thing. I mean, it's so many, we talk about like, it's the cameras, it's the film, it's the
sounds.
It's everything. The sounds, the clicks, it's like the bags even, like, what, like it's all of it.
Oh, but once you scan the image, it's a digital file. So why do you even shoot film?
So what is it before then? A negative is the original object. If it's slide, it's maybe just if crazy. It's a 120 slide.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. People are crazy.
Yeah, well, then you can gatekeep. You can keep the crazies out and let the good crazies in.
Yep.
So, I mean, I wanted to ask one other question.
Please.
How do you select your visiting artists?
People I really want to talk to.
Yeah. Same as what we do here, I guess. Yeah.
You know, people I absolutely fall in love with and I think will be a great fit for whatever the hive mind is kind of buzzing about right now, because we're always in dialogue. And then sort of unconsciously, I've selected people that are typically in their 50s or above. Mm. They're in that stage where they really have some incredible accomplishments to share about and some advice, and they feel generous and want to sort of mentor and talk to the next sort of fate, you know, generation coming up behind them. And often people who have published books that I absolutely adore or doing things in photo land that I admire. Jesse Lenz, we had on, runs Chico Review, runs Charcoal Press. I'm always sending people to him. I highly recommend for anyone who's getting into art photography to go to Chico Review if you can. It's the place to be for connecting with that scene.
Yeah.
And the speakers and the reviewers, it's a great experience. I haven't been myself, but it's many people I know, and two Memory Cult members went last year. And so when they came back, we did a podcast and talked about it and got and spilled the tea and got the ins and outs of how it really feels and at what point in your career should you go. So I think that, you know, the communities are the scenes, you just, it's contagious.
Yeah.
I believe you. Right. It's just really contagious. So like if someone says I'm having blocks or problems or issues, I'm like, just get around someone who's having a great time and it'll rub off on you.
So true.
Yeah, inspiration comes from everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially like a place like Memory Cult where you can be like, I need inspiration. Bam. Let me go and peruse and listen to talks and look at other people's work that's like, you know, in that same realm of what you're trying to do.
Well, there's like a kind of like a grab bag where I've found like the way that I teach, I'm a workshop teacher. So I'm very practical. I don't have an allegiance to one thing or another. I do in my practice, but as far as how I teach, I'm trying to find out what's interesting to you.
Right.
And then what we do is we experiment and we see. So like, for example, getting people to shoot flash in family work, you know, it's like, you know, shepherding people into that transition when it never crossed their mind is so interesting. Cause then it's like all of a sudden work that was sort of tepid and mediocre or predictable becomes fantastic and beautiful, and flash is what was needed to actually give some dimensionality to their subjects because of the way they shoot. So things like that, very, very practical things to get in and start trying and learning about. I think Memory Cult really offers that experience of what even are my options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, making people think outside the box is like
sure
a huge thing.
Yes,
because we get, you know, on our this is my style and this is what it looks like, and you're like, okay, we'll try. Then they're like, oh my god, like
yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I definitely love. I mean, I'm really into the art of the question. We do a prompt every morning, and the right question can give you 5 or 10 years of a photographic adventure.
Yeah.
And so my first question to anyone when we start talking is just, why does this feel like the right question to you? Because sometimes it's not even the right question.
Right.
You know, we can get underneath a little bit and start asking something more fundamental. And, you know, that's difficult. That's difficult, but it yields great things. When we can actually ask ourselves these questions about the assumptions that we're carrying that honestly, a lot of people pick them up from the university. Memory cults is kind of like a university rehab sometimes. People have had these either dogmatic or cruel critiquing experiences. Many people have had great experiences and have beautiful instructors, because it's all about the instructor. They have these great experiences, but a lot of them were taught to behave dogmatically and to assume that creativity is hierarchical. And we have a non-hierarchical assumption. I like the pictures that my daughters make on their point and shoots as much as I like family work that's, you know, in the canon of photo books. Like, and Peggy Levison Nolan had talked about that when she came in and gave a talk, which was like now part of, you know, memory cult lore. Like she was just such a titan, you know, to us.
Yeah.
Of work of her family. And I named her talk, The Playing Field is Always Level. I always name the talks afterward, given wherever the conversation
ends. Yeah.
And that's what she said. She said, the playing field is always level. Like the opportunity to make great pictures restarts every single day.
Wow.
God, you can get back out there. Yeah. And try something new. You need
especially, that, you know, Chris. Yeah, just because like I've been so tired. I've been working. That kid's not sleeping. No. And I'm like, I have to make the work. I've made myself, like I've said, this is the work I want to make. And they're every day they're getting bigger and they're growing and they're changing. And I'm like, I have to remember that every day I have an opportunity if I just pick the camera up. Load the film, pick the camera up.
Sometimes it's which camera, you know? Like, so for me, like I make, who knows, you guys? Probably 80% of my work is on the album.
Yeah.
Because this thing is one-handed.
Heard that sound, right?
Because, no, right? Because guess what the other hand is doing? It's feeding somebody.
Yes. That's the other thing too. It's like that, yeah. Like I'm like, I'm going to use my Leica. I'm like, I can't get the kid with the thing. No, I just need to take the point and shoot, you know, like.
And then get a nice scan of it. So that's a great way of just, okay, if you want to use a point and shoot, but you're looking to make somewhat more serious work, then just get a great scan, you know, make sure it's well lit. You've got a great powerful flash and you're getting a good scan so that you can do something with the work later. You don't have to go back like me.
Yeah.
And redo all your shoes.
Yeah.
So, you know, point and shoot, autofocus, aperture priority are your friends as a mother.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because people think that they think shooting film is like shooting the, you know, shooting 6x7 and like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. It can be that way.
And if it's not shot on the Hasselblad, it's not going to be worthy of the book.
That's how I'm always.
It's interesting that it is popularly said, but yet you have like Coming and Going by Jim Goldberg, for example. Mm. Which is using all technique, and it's using the sort of, you know, even juvenile aesthetic of collage in a beautiful way to tell stories. So I really love to say I have all the cameras. I have point and shoots, I have medium format, I've got Polaroids, everything, you know, I just know which one to reach for.
Right.
And for me, autofocus and aperture priority are non-negotiables when we're talking about my kids and their life. Because I just need to be able to make the image.
Yeah.
And I use that combination all the time. And people are shocked to find out that they don't need to use the AE1. Like, you like do ChatGPT, like, what? I want to shoot film photography. What should I do? It's just going to bring you to the OM1 or whatever. And it's you just, you're in there like autofocusing, what, on an 18-month-old that's running in and out for keeping running into the road?
Right.
So, for me, love autofocus, absolute non-negotiable. And I use it on all my client work. I love it as a tool. It is my BFF. We have a little BFF necklace, me and autofocus.
I know. I mean, it's true. I don't know why it's like putting restrictions on ourselves. Stupid.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. It's like, who is the we? Did that come from the university? Did that come from forums?
No, I don't
even. Yeah, the boomers on Reddit really infiltrate that deeply to make us hate this incredible technology. I'm doing a darkroom class right now. It's also technology. Yeah. I'm sitting there fiddling with the enlarger. I can't see in there because I don't see very well in the dark.
Yeah.
Which is not a good fit for darkroom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My bluster gets me through. I'm like, that's fine. We'll just try it. See what happens because I can't see. So, but I mean, that's technology as well.
Yeah.
And I love technology. I love machines. I'm pro any technology that gets you to something that's exciting, that feels, that's actually representing how you feel. Yeah. Go for it.
Love it.
I couldn't agree more.
I love it.
Yeah.
Man.
Wow.
We'll be right back with listener question for Anastasia right after this message from our sponsor.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters' 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, they're a ton of fun. We talk shop, we develop some film, we laugh. We also try to get former guests to join us on these. Planning a big resurrection on these also in 2026. Get these back going again. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Han Fawn. Hey, Han.
Hi.
And they wanted to know, pics really give off Sally Mann nostalgia. Who are your biggest influences? I love this question.
My mother, my father, my grandfather, and my grandmother.
Wow.
Their pictures.
Wow.
Ring the bell. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, that's my photographic lineage. And I'm always in the archives. It's always inspiring me. It's always speaking to me.
Wow.
I also use it to trace my own story. So it's very emotionally charged for me to be in their archives. And all of them were shooting in a vernacular way. None of them were professional or even had any kind of artistic intent. It was purely to document, but it's all on film and Super 8 and VHS. So it's gorgeous.
Wow.
And I'm really inspired by it. I'm inspired by seeing the ways that family ritual, specifically American family rituals, endure. So when I opened the Super 8s and, you know, sort of discovered them, I'm like, this is just the exact life that I'm living with my kids now. We're going to the park. We're having birthday parties. We're having New Year's Eve parties with the same sparklers. We're in the street, you know, playing kickball. We are like, there's a lineage here in the way that we're going to national parks. We're vacationing at the, you know, we're going to the lake. We're going to the pool. The ladies are, you know, sort of laying out with a magazine. And I just, the continuity of that cultural continuity is really inspiring for me. Wow. I love family lore.
I'm just so jealous, like I said earlier about that. I've said it a million times on this show. Like I played in bands. We were just talking about it in our little break there. Like I've played in bands for like a decade, 15 years, and never had a single camera to take a photo. Now, I have a couple show videos that people in the audience had shot, or, you know, I do have some photos that like ex-girlfriends took, or, you know, something like that. But I really wish I would have had the moments of where we're all, you know, smoking cigs in the basement and writing songs. Well, and
actually has a fucking photograph. So it's interesting because it always happens that way. And so a question that we can somewhat assuage our regrets with is saying, what do I have access to right now that I'm not seeing and photographing? Because it's happening now as well.
Right.
Like in 10 years, we're going to say, oh my God, my neighbors, Bruce and Carol, were so photogenic. They're always flying down the street on their motorcycle. Why didn't I make them? They totally would have done it.
Yeah.
You know, so we do have access, but it's like we don't see what's in front of our faces sometimes and what would make a great picture. And looking back, I feel the same way. Like I had access to the cult and I made a lot of digital work. And only at the tail end last 4 years, I was shooting film. And those, it haunts me. Before I go to bed, I'm like, that would have been, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing. There was 45 kids running down a hill like that. These pictures that I never took absolutely haunt me. So I have no balm. There's no way to fix it. It's going to torture us forever. But maybe one thing we can do is photograph now and try to see what we actually have access to now.
Dude, that's the best answer I've heard of that question that I've or the whatever the scenario I've proposed at times, because it's so true. It's not that stupid cliche, you know, you miss the shots you don't take or whatever like that, whatever that Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or whoever. I'm not a sports guy, so this is tough for me. But
Wayne Gretzky,
something like that.
What sort of shots you don't take?
But that is the truest statement, especially in like a photography setting too. It's like, it's so true. Like there's so many times, and again, to bring it back to Andre Wagner on Pauly B's Walkie Talkie, it's like, I forget, he said the time is now or something, like a mantra that he would play in his head all the time. Like that's really been sticking with me. And I go to Matt Day's live stream every week, every Wednesday, and we just a bunch of dudes talking photography and stuff. And it's, I said it the other day, I was just like, yeah, I just started, instead of bringing my cameras with me, knowing they're in my bag, one is around my neck now all the time. And I'm always shooting now. Like I'm shooting the stuff that I wouldn't necessarily shoot before, because I was like, it's not worth getting in my bag and getting it out.
Oh, don't ever listen to that voice.
Yeah,
I know. Dude,
but it's been working, and I'm like back to like being in the process of like the daily life shots, stuff that I love, the mundane. Like I love that stuff. The everyday
you
is.
You can get revenge too. You can get revenge on yourself. So like last night, this happens to me. Okay. So last night we went to like a fall festival for the school. We are crazy trying to get out of the house, right? Three kids, all this. I'm leaving for California tomorrow, blah, blah. So I'm in mom mode. Now, I always have my point and shoot, but I get to this festival. You already know. It's like a county fair vibe.
Yeah.
There are pictures everywhere. And it's loud. No one would have cared. I'm with my kids. Everybody knows me. I could have photographed. I could have made 500 pictures last night with no friction whatsoever of children, my favorite subject, in these amazing scenarios and in their costumes. Obviously, I'm devastated, but I'm going to take revenge. So I said, next year, I'm coming for you. It's 364 day kingdom. Because the fall festival next year, I'm not going to be in mom mode. I am going to photograph, and I am going to use this opportunity. Same thing with the pool. My kids are in swim. And I sit there and I'm like, I have this right here. Next year, I'm planning out the cameras that would be appropriate for the setting. And I'm going to write this eternal wrong that is happening in my eyes. So sometimes we can plan ahead and say, okay, let's get back in there. This is the scenario where I want to make pictures.
I love that. Yeah. I love that, like, forgiving yourself and, like, giving yourself grace.
No, I don't. I take revenge. It's the opposite.
We missed it, but I'm coming for you. Yeah.
Yep. And then they can really start to think, oh, okay, the flash is cool here because it's a chaotic, it's fun. But at the pool, you are a creep, you know? Like, if I get the pool, so I need somebody silent to come with me and then like this. But I have a lot. I mean, I've been photographing children for a long time. I have every technique in the books. And also, if I do photograph in a public way that's not my kids in street photography style, I really give those pictures time. Those aren't going up on my Instagram. That would be you know, for a show in 15 years or
something.
I don't want the moral complexity right now, but something like the Fall Festival, it's like everyone would have been like, cheers.
Yeah,
missed opportunity because I was just too chaotically involved.
Isn't that great? Like, just like, I know the feeling you're talking about. I'm sure our listeners too, like, when you're like, damn it.
Oh my God.
No, why? I take it everywhere and it doesn't get pulled out half the time. The one time I'm like, I'm not going to bring it because I know I'm going to be run around after them, that you're like, why did I do it? Why did I? Yeah.
I know. So it's just keep it loaded. And then that minute, going back to the auto boy, I mean, everyone in Memory Cult got an auto boy because they asked me I'm like, that's my favorite. That's what I do. But there is a kind of like learning curve with the auto boy. So anybody out there, if you're going to go get an auto boy, first of all, don't, because you're jacking up the price. I mean, they break every 12 months.
Seriously.
So, my husband's an engineer. He's fixed them for me and they still... hopeless, but I still go bags like total addiction. I go back and keep buying them because they really perform, period.
Yeah.
And the autofocus doesn't search, it's just zone focusing. So it's like it meets my chaos in the way that I'm actually living with three kids and a disobedient dog.
Yes.
So for me, it's like this camera is actually the one that's going to come out. You know, I've heard that before. Like, what's the best camera? The one you actually will use.
Right.
Totally relevant for me.
Perfect segue is our two-part camera question. It's the first part is the desert island. Like, I'm guessing it's going to be the auto boy, but you could surprise. All right. Well, what's it going to be and why?
It's the Polaroid SX70.
Oh, shit. Yes.
Yeah. I need a print. Because is there a lab? Is there a dark room on this desert island?
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, we say it's a magical island. Yeah, you get batteries, repair shops.
If it's a magical island, then I want the Pentax 645, but I want it to perform and be tiny in my hand like the auto boy.
A mini.
Well, yeah. Mini. I'd love to make medium format pictures if they're autofocus with aperture priority and as easy as my auto boy. But I think the Polaroid SX70 for me is like, I feel like I could grow old with that camera because it produces a level of beauty that I'm seeking. It satisfies me to have the print right away. It's my oldest history with the Polaroid, but the 600, which I have and love, is just a different look. It's not enabling me to create this type of beauty. And I'm very impatient and even lazy. So for me, it's like a impatient woman's tintype. It's like, me what I want fast.
Right.
And that's important for me because I've already, you know, for me, I take the picture and I've already moved on to 10 other things. It's definitely how I operate. So a Polaroid that's really yielding, like not just snapshot style, but giving me tools and enabling me to really create a beautiful image. It's got to be more in SX70 for life.
Dude, legendary camera. I mean,
legendary.
Every shot still feels brand new. Every time I use it, I'm still just as blown away as the first shot.
That's right. And the autofocus on the sonar is fabulous.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
So like I can photograph children jumping, you know, awful. Of a downed log in the middle of the lake, and it's perfect.
So good.
Nails it. So I love it. Yeah, I love that camera. I do client work on that camera. I always include exposures for that.
That's cool.
Black and white from the SX70.
Love it. All right, part two. We call her the white whale. Is there a camera that you have been like hitting eBay or, you know, the internet looking for one that you've always had your eye on but just never had the chance to own it? Or you owned it and need it back.
Yeah.
Oh, God, there is that.
The white whale.
You know what? The white whale. It's funny because I think I'm always trying to stretch myself outside of what I just described of being really fast, being frenetic and being on to the next and impatient. And my best work comes out of there. My work comes out of there. So naturally, I have to always try to change myself. I have to try to become Mark Steinmetz. I have to try to shoot slow medium format because I love that work. I buy that work. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. I love it. So I'm always eyeing and looking at and I just got a Fuji. Gosh, what is it? It's a 6x9. And the Fuji 6x9, it's like a 692.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. GW.
So that was my white whale forever. I thought, oh, God. And then, of course, I'm just like enraged using it because I'm trying to photograph my kid running. I'm trying to, and it's a different kind of picture. So I always have to keep retraining myself. So I think honestly, my white whale is a Polaroid 8x10.
Oh man, yeah,
yeah.
And the whole journey of Kill Bill, yeah,
yeah. And Judith Black is good, is coming to us in January in Memory Cult. She'll be the speaker, and her portfolio is shooting on that 8x10 Polaroid, and I just absolutely love it. And I think for me, it's evasive. The film, as you know, the way that the lineage of it was disrupted by the lack of production of the film.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
Total sadness of that because of how beautiful it is. So I think the Polaroid 8x10 pull apart's my white whale.
Yeah. Yeah. Legendary camera. Yeah.
That's a good answer. I don't think anybody's ever said that one.
I want it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very different from your point and shoot. I love that. I love that.
But it gives me that immediacy. It gives me that immediacy. Yeah. It also keeps this delusional hope alive that I'm going to like make slow portraiture, which I can't let die, even though I don't.
No, I pulled out my 4x5 and I'm like looking at 4x5s. Timothy's like, just make sure you're going to use it before you spend the money because I know you. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do it.
I will.
I swear to God, I'm going to. But it's like, you know. What?
It's the damn kids because like if we go to the farm, if it was just me. Of course I can.
Yeah.
Person, but it's like I'm being like covered in spaghetti sauce while I'm trying to talk.
Yeah,
like this life stage, all compatible. Like you know, you just my philosophy is just always force it, force it, make it work, make everyone unhappy, make them wait in the car, just force it, and that's what I do.
I mean, sometimes you have to. I'm like, it's gonna be worth it. Just wait one. Just give me 1 second. You know,
mommy's creating.
Mommy's creating. Stay still.
Benadryl for everyone. Here you go.
Mommy included. Yeah, mommy included.
So funny.
Oh my God. So good.
Oh,
so
man. Good. Anything else, Chris, you could
think
of? I
don't know. Anastasia, this has just been, like, I knew it was going to be like this when we agreed to come on. I know we had to reschedule a bunch, and I was like, damn it, when? Because I need it. Thank you. This has been fantastic. Where can everybody check out your work? Given the info on Memory Cult, how they can sign up and join and plug.
Sure. Thank you guys so much for having me. This is fantastic. I feel like we're in it now together.
Yeah, the trenches.
Our paths, we're fellow travelers. It's absolutely.
100%.
Well, you can find me on Instagram at Anastasia Pagonis. The Memory Cult handle is at We Are Memory Cult. Likewise, websites anastasiapagonis.com and memorycult.com. Mm.
Amazing. Timothy, where are you?
Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups. You can go to timothymakeups.com, and there's some dusty YouTube videos you can check out. Just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
I am Crispy Photo on all the things. Threads, Instagram, YouTube. We are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Threads. And that's where the podcast is. And that's it. Anastasia, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We are so hyped. This has been amazing.
We did it.
Yay. All right, everybody. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
All right. First off, Chris and I would love to thank Anastasia for coming on the show. Memory Cult, such a cool, great idea. Such a wealth of information. Love your story. The Auto Boy. I mean, come on. Such a great conversation. Anastasia, thanks so much for hanging out with us and chatting. And, you know, if you need anything from us, we're here. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. And for only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon only development hang nights over there and a bunch of stuff in the archives. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. For the patrons that already support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. You're keeping the lights on. Again, patreon.com/analogtalk. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Only one episode left before the end of the year. It's going to be our year-end wrap-up episode. So that's exciting. It's been a great year. And again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week with the end-of-year episode. All right, take care, guys. Later.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.